good evening, everybody. It is 7 o'clock, and we will start the regular Town Discovery Bay CSD meeting. We'll start off by the Pledge of Allegiance. If I could ask Town Manager Mike to lead us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Get roll call, please.
Roll call has been taken. I'll let the record reflect that all members are present.
Thank you. Okay, this is the time for public comments. This is the opportunity for anyone in the public who wishes to speak on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. Do we have any members of the public?
Bill Helfrich, can I have my comment? The items, please.
Go ahead, Bill.
Okay, yeah.
And if I could ask the rest of the people to mute their phones while Bill is speaking.
Can I start now?
Go ahead, sir.
Okay, will the grant for the Clipper Drive Linear Park project include funding to maintain the park? If the answer to this is no, where will the money for the maintenance of the park come from? It seems the only money for park maintenance comes out of Zone 8, and Zone 8 has limited funds. Are you going to have to sacrifice maintenance or other expenses to fund the Clipper Drive Linear Park maintenance? Topic one. Topic two, will you please consider changing the format used when the board's chambers are closed for public hearings? My suggestion for a better format is a Zoom meeting where you, the board members, are seen on our screens and that the public has only the ability to deal with the audio in the Zoom audio. And the third item is a clarification of your policy. For future reference, if a speaker wishes to make public comment on more than one topic, will they be allowed 3 minutes on each topic? That ends my public comment.
Thank you, Bill. Do we have any other public comments?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Helfrich is the only individual from the public other than Ms. Dawn Marini of the media.
Okay, with that then, we will close the public comments and move forward on the agenda with the consent calendar. Is there any item of the consent calendar that the board members wish to have removed?
No.
Hearing none. Any public comment on the consent calendar?
Yes. Mr. President, on the consent calendar, item C2, I would like to know what services were performed by JW Backhoe and Construction for $63,567.32, and what were the goods or services, or for what goods or services is the Town of Discovery Bay CSD being paid $60,916.34? Those are my questions.
Thank you. Any other public comments? Hearing none, we will close the consent calendar. Hearing none, I'll move back to the board for motion.
Motion to approve consent.
Second.
Roll call.
Director Graham?
Aye.
Director Callahan?
Aye.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Vice President Graves?
Aye.
President Gatto?
Aye. Motion passes. Moving on to the agenda, we'll go to presentations, the draft water shortage contingency plan. You want?
Yes.
Yes. This is Justin Cho. I'm on the line. Can everybody hear me?
Yes, Justin.
Hello, Justin.
Hello, Kevin. Hello, Ryan. Good evening, board. Mike, would you like me to all proceed with the presentation?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay, so what we have for you tonight is a presentation on the draft water shortage contingency plan. There's no action that are needed tonight on this agenda. the board meeting, at a board meeting in February, we're proposing to bring this water shortage contingency plan for adoption from the board of directors. So tonight we're just going to let you know what's inside of it. So I'm speaking from the board packet that I downloaded online on page 17 of the PDF of the complete board packet, starting with my presentation that says Town of Discovery Bay Draft Water Shortage Contingency Plan, January 20th, 2021, going to slide two. And the overview for this presentation is just discussing the purpose of the plan, the requirements of the plan, and the elements of the plan, what's inside of it. So going to slide three. The purpose of this is to comply with the requirement by the Department of Water Resources. The Water Shortage Contingency Plan provides a method for the town to assess water shortages, define water shortage levels, and provide an action plan that can be implemented by the Board of Directors if the Board of Directors declares there to be a water shortage. And it could be modified at any time by the Board of Directors. That's the end of slide three. I'm going to move on to the next slide, four. Now I'm on page 20 of the PDF. For those looking at the PDF, Water Shortage Contingency Plan Requirements. So the requirement to prepare a plan that complies with the legislation, these are the elements listed on this slide are the key items, I guess, that I would focus on. The entire plan includes 12 sections that are the comprehensive requirements. But ultimately, what we're focusing on here is that there's the water supply reliability analysis. There's procedures that are defined to conduct a water supply and demand assessment. Definition of six water shortage levels. Development of action plans for water shortages, response action, and description of communication protocols. This water shortage contingency plan that we have needs to be adopted before we can complete the urban water management plan that's due to DWR by July 1st of this year. So that's why we're bringing it early now so we can incorporate it into the urban water management plan. Moving on to the next slide. The elements of the water shortage contingency plan. This is just a listing of the 12 essential sections that are inside of the plan. And behind it, what we have is just whether it's a new section or an updated section. And the importance there is that there was a draft water shortage contingency plan 5 years ago that we put in the included with the urban water management plan. And there's new requirements this year, so that's where the new part comes in. And the other new part is that we actually have to formally adopt this separate from urban water management. So moving on to the next slide. Now we're getting into what's inside of the plan, what are the elements of the plan. And one of these new requirements is to do an annual water supply and demand assessment. So what that means is, every year, there will be a presentation to the board showing what the water supply and demand assessment is, and then the board can determine from that assessment whether there needs to be a declared water shortage. And this supply and demand assessment is very straightforward, not time-consuming. The purpose of it is to satisfy, really, DWR's requirements. So this particular assessment is just meant to inform DWR whether the agencies are forecasting there to be a water shortage on a total annual water volumetric basis. At any other time throughout the year, if there is a water shortage, the board can obviously meet and declare that. Moving on to the next slide, this is what's defined inside of the plan. There are six water shortage levels that's required in that legislation. ranging from mild to catastrophic. And they're categorized mild, moderate, severe, critical, and catastrophic. And there's a description inside of the plan that provides examples for what might trigger these different severity levels within the town, such as loss of wells or regional droughts. But the water shortage levels would, again, be declared by the board of directors at the time of there being a water shortage. And it would reflect the percent of water supply shortage that we would be facing at that time. So moving on to the next, there's been the water shortage response action slide that is listing out the different actions that are described in the plan. So the categories are, these are the actions that would be considered and implemented if there is a shortage. Supply augmentation is just a discussion on, you know, considering modifications to wells, or if there's any application we can find for recycled water. That would be how we might consider augmenting supply, because we don't have access to surface water or other supply options. The demand reduction levels, I would say, are the biggest part of this plan, where we're defining a lot of different options available to help reduce demand and associating that with the different shortage levels, 1 through 6. And I have the table on the subsequent slides, but I'm not planning on going over every item right now. I just wanted to, bring that to your attention, I guess. There's also operational changes that could be considered, and we've met with staff and met with Veolia to think about what kind of operational changes we can do in the event of a water shortage. And so, such as flushing, focusing on wells that we know are more efficient, having a toolbox that we can use from the meter data to observe leakage, and be more proactive on responding to things that look like potential leakage. Then there's mandatory restrictions, which are the mandatory items once we're at a critical level, level 3 and above. These are the state mandatory items that are listed there that would have to be enacted if we're at a critical supply level of 3 or above. And then there's also emergency response plan, which would be really just a relationship to it. If there's a shortage as a result of catastrophic event, we would also be looking for other actions we should be taking as part of our emergency response plan. So the next slide, I'm on the PDF page 25, 26, and 27, are a table demand reduction actions that show the different types of demand reductions we can do for public information, landscape irrigation, rate structures, pretty much every idea that the state wants to be considered is in here. It doesn't mean that you would have to impose those when there is a water shortage. You would define which of these actions would be part of that resolution that the board would be making at that time. So these are tools, really, that the board could use at that time. And then I'm going now to the slide after that demand reduction table to communication protocols that describe, based on the level of severity, the types of communications that we would be doing, starting from, level 1, which is really just, there's no communication, because level 1 is reflecting our ongoing voluntary water conservation from a resolution in 2014. And beyond any ongoing communication that takes place for conservation. But then starting from that, when we have declared anything 2 or above, we would start doing things like bill inserts, more information on the website, more information if there's a current drought, leading up to direct mail to, newspaper ads, workshops as it becomes more severe. So that's the communication step. And then I'm going to the second to last the urban water management plan this year. This was what we discussed a month ago when we were laying out the urban water management plan schedule, just to show you where we're at. And so we're right now at the January 20th presentation of the draft water shortage plan. And what we're proposing to do is to bring this to the board on February 17th to review and adopt it. And we would make that available. We would do a newspaper advertisement 14 days prior to the public hearing to review and adopt it and make it available on the town's website. And then from there, we would be moving into finalizing the urban water management plan, which we would be doing a presentation for the board on April 7th, similar to this, where there's no action needed, just discussing, describing what's inside of it, and then reviewing and adopting that on May 5th, and submitting it to DWR before the due date, which is July 1st. And that concludes my presentation.
Any questions from the board?
Yes, this is Carolyn Graham. I just have one question. You talk about in the proposed plan, updated six standard shortage levels and then corresponding responses. How does that differ than the last drop that we went through when the town, you know, would contact the citizens and say, you need to do this, you need to do that, whatever? Does it vary much from the last drought?
It's a modification from what we did in the last drought. And in the previous version of the water shortage contingency plan, during the drought, there was a state requirement that was imposed for us to do a mandatory reduction of, I believe we were at 30%, somewhere thereabouts. So we had to develop reporting to the state at that time to show that each month we're meeting our target. And they, you know, through the whole process for what the baseline was, target was that we're trying to meet, and how we're reporting it. These don't have those requirements. These levels aren't, unless the state re-invokes something like that, we wouldn't have to be doing that type of reporting that we would do to the state. But I think the measures that we took at that time to notify the public, you know, change our operations to really meet that 30% reduction, we're probably in the level three, probably similar to the level three category here, where, you know, we're not rationing per se, but we are having very strict restrictions at that point, and having enforcement and compliance, because it was mandatory and there could have been fines on the town. But we weren't critically facing our own shortage. We had enough supply in our wells. We could keep our tanks full. So there wasn't a need to go to the more extreme levels of four, five, and six that are shown here.
Thank you.
Hey, Justin, it's Kevin. So just for clarification on the statement you just made, we had to comply with the state mandates that the entire state had to comply to, and it didn't necessarily apply to us because of our water supply. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And this six standard water shortage level chart that you have, how did that change from, is that about the same as it was in the last presentation?
Are you referring to, like, from where it was in the 2015 urban water management from 5 years ago, or something more recent than that?
Well, you say it falls under the updated category and not the new category, so is it pretty much the same as what it was before?
It added a level, a water shortage level. Before, I think we had five levels, and we had to do a walk to compare our structure that we had developed before to conform with what the state mandated six levels. So it's a little different than what we previously had.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Justin, thank you.
Yeah, you're public comment.
Is there any public comment?
Bill Helfrich.
Go ahead, Bill.
So if I read through this plan, and it's my understanding that these restriction visions can only be imposed if it is determined that the CSD cannot meet the water demands of our current infrastructure. And in the plan, it says, with our current wells, we can produce annually, I'm going to say, I think it said something like 2.5 million gallons of water, and that our usage is only about 1,050,000 gallons of water. So that our ability to meet the demands of our consumers is more than adequate. And I do remember that we were being fined if we washed our car or washed down a sidewalk with a hose. And is there, and it's selfishness, but if we have enough water, why are we pinching water? Because it doesn't save anything and it doesn't go anywhere. So could we not fight the state if they put in these restrictions again? And my other question would tie to this is, since it's an item on the agenda, if anybody wants to talk about it, you're allowed to.
Thank you, Bill. Okay, if that's it, then we'll move on to item E1, Bailey Water Project.
Hey, good evening, everybody.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
I hope everybody had a good holidays, and let's just finish it up, the last report for the year of 2020, December. As you can see, days are still going up with 4,144 days safety operations and 199,288 working hours with no accidents. The second slide is just showing all the documentation presented to the state of the California. As you can see, there's probably two more documents more than last month, the previous month. Next slide is just showing us we still have seven, all the wells still active, minus 5B, which we still have it as a standby. Right there also we show the production of December 2020 was 59.9 million gallons for that month. Next slide is just showing all the back tests, all the samples that were taken around Old Discovery Bay. They all were non-detected. That means that we are good to go. Right here, it's just a table, data table from the wastewater treatment plant. The one thing that we are very happy is to see that finally our conductivity last row shows 2,375. We're good to go. Alright, so now the next one is just the wastewater pollution report. We didn't have anything to report with the NPDES. Also, one note is that we have one SSO. At this point, all documentation were reported to the state. No, I haven't heard anything from them. So there will be more to come once I heard from the state. Next slide. That's just the terminology. And if you guys have any questions, thank you very much.
Jerry, was the SSO you're referring to? Is that the one with the concrete in the?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's the one. We finally submit all the documentation. We haven't heard anything about it.
Could be months.
I spoke with the regulator, and we're still waiting.
Is there a limitation of time when you'll hear from them or not hear from them when that's a non-issue?
There's been times that it takes probably about 6 months, 7 months, probably could be a year.
You're never completely off the hook.
You know, it's kind of like those outstanding bills that just hang there, right?
Yeah.
But after a year, you can feel kind of good about it.
But a year and a month? It could happen still.
All
activities what we measure in water. There's one, you have to have a certain amount of conductivity for aquatic life when you do discharge.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what they're talking about.
Good. Okay. Do we have any public comment?
Nothing for me, thank you.
There you go.
For sure, nothing else, Jeff.
Then we'll move on to business and action items. Turn this over to staff.
Thank you, Board. The first item is appointments to the standing committees. We do this every 2 years. These are 2-year appointments. And we begin with the first choice will be through the president, second choice, vice president. Then it goes by seniority, which would be Director Porter, then Director Callahan, then Director Graham. So we will start with you, President.
I will pick Park and Recreation and stay on that committee.
Very good. Vice President Graham.
Water, wastewater, please.
Internal operations, please.
And Director Grant.
Communications.
Back to President Gatto.
I will choose the Finance Committee.
Vice President Graves.
I will choose the Finance Committee.
Communications.
Not much of a choice, Director Graham.
Yeah.
Put you down for a trouble.
Real funny.
They're all important.
Yeah. No.
They are all important.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. That concludes this, unless there's any questions or comments.
Do we have any public comments regarding the committee choices?
The only thing comment I would make as I was reading through the article is I had a question why Director Callahan had more seniority than Director Graham, but I found the answer because he had more votes than she had. So I just think it's important that we understand where these things come from. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Then we'll move on to item two.
Thank you. This is now for appointments to regional committees. So you have a primary, and then you have an alternate for each regional committee that's listed in the staff report. The difference between regional committees as they stand at this moment is these are voluntary attendance. There are no stipends for attending these committees at this time. In order to receive, under the current bylaws, in order to receive a stipend for attending a particular regional committee, it requires a vote of the board to approve that before the actual meeting takes place. So with that, are there any questions about that first?
Can I make a couple statements about that, if I may?
Sure.
Because this has transitioned over the years and how this is approached. And based on the fact that you're not going there with any guidance or direction from the board, you really can't represent the board at these meetings, and at least that's what I've been told. You kind of go there as an individual. You don't go there with any official capacity unless you are sent there by the board ahead of time for a specific agenda item, let's say opening a new fire station or something along those lines. So I'm not really clear as to why this is even necessary. Anybody can go. It's volunteer. The assignment doesn't carry any weight with it. I'm not sure why we're still doing it this way. And in likewise, and I mean, it's fine to do it. It's just likewise, I believe that as a future agenda item, there are at least a couple of committees here that we should have appointments to and be represented officially. In fact, there's some here that we're requested to be at. And I think that needs to be addressed at a future board meeting and get those assignments straightened out where we're actually supposed to be there representing Discovery Bay.
I have a comment. Oh, do you need to say something?
No, go ahead.
Okay. No, I totally agree with Kelly. I'm looking at this list. There's some, maybe we need to be there, but there are some that I think would be extremely important. And if we need to be there, then we need to be assigned to go, not, let me see, it's on Tuesday, and Taco Tuesday, I'm not kidding. I'm joking. I'm sorry. I shouldn't joke. I think we need to be, it needs to be taken a little more serious than that. I think we need to be assigned, which would be something the board would need to vote on.
Future agenda item where we can address that a little bit more fully. And I think that'll give staff an opportunity to put together a plan that we may be able to look at. And then also, your staff is more aware of the items that we've been asked to attend as opposed to those that are just there that we may attend. So if that's what I would like to see come back as a future agenda item.
Okay. Does the board wish to continue with actually making the choices tonight or coming back at a different time to do that?
I think given the fact that we need additional information, that the board should wait.
You guys
make any
choices?
Mm-hmm.
I agree 100%. Yeah. Let's just table this until we come back with some more information. And I think you probably will talk to council also about this and make sure that we're doing it properly so that we can be assigned for a period of time as opposed to each individual meeting.
Well, and council can correct me if I'm wrong, but this under the current bylaws, this board, when they can make the choices in the future or tonight regarding what committees they want to be on, and the board can also make a sweeping decision to say, well, if you attend meeting X during the course of this year, we are assigning you as a board and you vote on that, that's good for the whole year. Or you can do it by individual meeting. If you want to change the policy completely in the bylaws, so that means you would actually have to change the bylaws themselves. But the bylaws provide that as long as you vote as a board prior to going to the meetings, you can say the meetings for the rest of this year going to regional meeting X, the board approves, and then that becomes stipendable and an actual assignment.
Can I give an example just so I can make sure I'm understanding correctly?
Okay.
So if we said tonight as a board, we feel like the Contra Costa County Enforcement, East Contra Costa County Fire Protection, and Water Management are committees that we feel sweeping as a board should be assigned and get stipends for. We can make that decision tonight and vote on it without having to make a bylaw change.
That is correct, and that would be good for either one meeting or you could do it for the entire year.
And then the other committees listed, once we decide, are voluntary based on what the board decided.
Correct.
Okay.
And the board could vote at any time prior to a particular meeting on those other ones to have a particular person attend that meeting, and it could be a one-meeting vote for that assignment instead.
So if the Contra Costa County Aviation Advisory Committee said we need to have a board representative at our meeting in May, at our April meeting, we could decide as a board, we are going to send the person that's assigned to that committee as a board representative for the May meeting only, and they would get a stipend for that, and they would be able to have a board voice for that. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And that's a great example, if I may actually respond to that. That's a great example because twice a year, I used to be on the aviation committee, twice a year they meet at the Byron Airport. And they talk about things about the Byron Airport. And there's going to be a lot of business development going on, there's supposed to be a lot of business development going on at the Byron Airport in the near future, which will affect Discovery Bay from a standpoint of employment, as well as transportation, a bypass that they're going to put through and these other things. So it would, that might be an, a great example of why it would be appropriate for that particular meeting rather than going over to whatchamacallit, over at Buchanan Field in Concord for every meeting, where it would more apply to what's happening in Byron, which affects us. So that's a good example of one that would probably not need to be on a blanket process, but on a one-to-one process. I just don't know if we're quite ready today, and I don't mean to jump on your job here, but whether we know enough about these committees as a group. I mean, some of these they've asked us to be at, and I'm not even clear. I mean, even though you and I've talked about it, I kind of forget how it worked, but I think it's the East County Water Management Association, the CCSDA, has asked us to be a part of it. We really should have a representative of LAFCO. And at the fire district, I think, because of the effect that it has on us, those would be four that I would look at and say, we probably should have people there. I don't know. I don't know about the SDR.
I don't know about LAFCO is a strong one, but I certainly think the others that you mentioned would be staff's recommendation that you have a representative attend those meetings when they occur. That would be staff's strong recommendation.
What
of course, if the board feels any others.
Can I add another one, if that's okay? I think the school district representative liaison would be a good one just to form a good working relationship with them.
Yeah.
I think that there's some things that come up with there that maybe be able to come back to some of our committees that are relevant.
Well, and I would agree to a large extent with that. We used to have a representative, Chris Steele used to go to all those meetings,
yeah,
and he developed a relationship with them, and he would bring back reports of what's going on, but it also gives them the positive idea that we're concerned about what are going on with our children and what's going on with the schools that are located here in our town. So, I mean, that we could go through each one. That's why I don't know if I want to do this tonight or whatever brings back. That's my.
We can get it over with tonight.
Okay.
Code enforcement. I would think code enforcement is an important one to be. We have a lot of issues, some small, some larger, in Discovery Bay, and I would think we'd want to be.
So
is that not how it works?
Well, the thought we had. To, go ahead.
I'm sorry. There's, in my opinion, there's still a lot of ambiguity to these different groups and committees. I would like to see staff come back to report describing each one and their relevance to the town of Discovery Bay to at least allow the board members to make an intelligent choice instead of trying to vet this out in our heads tonight.
I can't go ahead.
Okay.
You're stuck.
That's okay with the rest of
it. Consensus of the board, I'd be happy to do that. We can get that ready for the next meeting with a little more in-depth explanation of what each regional meeting means and its impact and importance.
Can we have an understanding of the ones that are requesting us to be a part of it, if that's even the thing?
Well, there are. The two that really prefer that we have a board member there are the Contra Costa Special Districts Association. That's highly attended by a variety of board members. And this is a subsect association of the California Special Districts Association. So there's a lot of presentations that are very informative to board members. Board members get to do, to vote in that association at those meetings. So a board member's presence is valuable there. Same situation with the East County Water Management Association. Doesn't meet that often, but when it does, it's a board member vote. A staff member cannot go there and vote or hold title to office within that association. So therefore, having a board member present there is important so that our vote can be heard and voted upon. I can't do that as a staff member.
It sounds like the consensus is if you can come back to the report and itemize it and give us a little more in-depth information, I think that may be the best.
Okay, one last comment. And could you let us know if there's any of these that you feel that it would be good to have the board, different board members go each time for the experience of attending the meeting? Maybe one person doesn't go all the time, maybe, one time it's Brian, the next time it's me, next time it's Michael.
Well, that's not how it's set up now by the bylaws.
Okay, all right.
However, two board members can go to a meeting and not create an issue. So if somebody has an interest in attending a meeting, they can still go there voluntarily.
Right. Well, they don't have three.
Okay.
Okay, great. Is there any public comment?
Yes, Bill Helfrich. All of these seem to be in-person meetings, which probably aren't happening. How are they being handled? Telephonically, Zoom, and how do you... I would assume that they're open to the public, and how do you get into those, much like we're doing here?
Not all meetings are open to the public, and they do have Zoom and teleconference. Some are different.
So how come some of these, they're not open to the public? I mean, it's a public meeting. I thought you had your, you couldn't bar people from their meetings. Which ones aren't we allowed to listen to? LAFCO?
Their association meetings? LAFCO you can go to. There's some of them are associations. They're not public meetings. They're associations. Like the CCSDA is an association. If you're not a member of that association, you don't participate in their meetings.
Which one's the associate? The East County Water Management Association. Okay. So.
And likewise, the
Mr. Chair, this is Ron Otterbury. Might I chime in here?
Yes, sure.
Thank you. So my understanding is these meetings generally are open to the public. That's not the issue before the board this evening. These meetings, to the extent that they post agendas and or subject to the Brown Act, would be available for public attendance as they see fit. Discovery Bay doesn't control those just because we may or may not attend a specific meeting. These are the meetings that historically have been of relevance to Discovery Bay to keep ourselves informed. And for the most part, I'm not seeing any on here, but they may have a closed session meeting. I'm not seeing any on here that would otherwise preclude the public from attending. They've got the same responsibility for most of these as we do under the Brown Act. And so Mr. Helfrich is asking a decent question, but it's not up to us in terms of Discovery Bay. We attend those meetings as they're advertised to the public and or we're a member by some other affiliation.
Got it. Thank you for the clarification. With that, then, let's move on to item three and a board workshop.
Each year, the board has a special meeting. We call it a workshop. And at this workshop, staff puts together slides, and it's our opportunity to go over with the board where we've been in the last year and where we are. And then lastly, where we intend to go. And it's the board's opportunity to ask questions in all three of those categories and then also provide feedback or ideas that staff can then use for establishing priorities, for establishing programs, for establishing CIP, for putting together the budget. Even though we do have a separate board budget workshop for that, it's nice to know what kind of major things we want to see take place. So that happens on an annual basis. It takes about 2 hours. Staff is recommending Thursday, March 4th, 2021 at 4 p.m. However, if that does not work for this board, we can try to reschedule something in the following week.
Does that date work for everybody?
I just checked, and it seems to be okay.
Yes,
it works. Excellent. Okay, then we will set it for a special board meeting for March 4th, 2021 at 4 p.m.
Perfect. Bill, do you have any comments?
No, I assume there'll be an agenda with a phone number published in time to attend the meeting.
Yes, typically it's a special board meeting. So they get posted no less than 24 hours before the meeting. We usually put it out pursuant to the staff report, which I know you're up on, basically where we're at is we're doing a refresh of Discovery Bay Boulevard since Clipper Drive was put on hold to apply for the linear grant. We've completed the landscape refresh of the east side of Discovery Bay Boulevard, and we're starting to prepare the west side for a similar refresh. I had an opportunity to speak with the president of the board, and we considered the Hoffman money has come in. This is an opportunity to consider, take a pause on just refreshing the west side of Discovery Bay and consider something more elaborate and more permanent than what we have in just a simple refresh. Things were discussed, such as widening the walkways and really making some major changes as possible ideas. Those are kind of out the door because in meeting with Rec 800, and it would require some very elaborate, exorbitantly expensive engineering and construction of retaining walls and getting approvals, and it could take literally a year or more. So it's really not practical unless the board really wants to move in that direction, but there is an opportunity to take a fresh look at, rather than just doing a refresh, if something, our landscape manager, to maybe come up with some ideas that would be a little more enduring and elegant than the simple refresh. And so we're bringing it to the board because it would require a pause, because we already have direction to do that on the west side. It would require a pause, and then my suggestion would be, if the board goes in that direction, that we work with the new recreation committee to come up with some ideas and thoughts, and then bring those recommendations from the Park and Rec Committee. And I know this was spurred by President Gatto, so...
If I could add just a couple more comments. Again, I did not want to derail what the previous board agreed upon, especially because we are very passionate about the landscaping. But with the new board and the new opportunities and some of the changes with the potential Clipper and the Hoffman monies, et cetera, I wanted to make sure that all the new board members had an opportunity to chime in, because it is a very relevant, important topic for all our consideration. So I did ask Mike to say, hey, can we ask a couple more questions, maybe talk to Rec 800? Are there some things that we can explore? You know, and as it turns out, it sounds like they're not really feasible, mm-hmm. both financially and logistically. So, you know, if the board wants to pause the cleanup, we can certainly do that.
And I gave some recommendations here, or some options for the board to vote on. My recommendation would be is if we do pause that refresh, that we move on to doing the next priority, which would be the southern islands of Discovery Bay Boulevard, which are in need of some lawn removal and some other things. So that would be staff's recommended option if you decide to go with the pause.
So if I could continue. My personal opinion is that we don't pause. The question was asked, it was answered. I'm not sure there's anything that can be done in addition to what was already approved on by the board and the landscape committee. There are some things that we did talk about that can be added later, whether it's new lighting, changing out the lights and...
Okay, you just lost me. I'm sorry, interrupting you. So when you're routing down Discovery Bay Boulevard, so we've been refreshing, if you will, on the right side. The left side is where it goes up. It's more of a levee.
Yes.
So
it is a levee.
In portions, it is.
Yeah, it is. Okay, it is a levee. So now you're saying to keep just refreshing that side of it, the side that is a levee?
I stopped the process. The process had started last week, mm-hmm. and I just asked staff, hey, listen, is there anything else we can think about? And they spoke with Rec 800, and as it turns out, some of the things that we thought about are not feasible.
Yeah, okay.
So given that, and given where staff's at and the priority of the landscaping project, my personal opinion is we should just continue on with the path.
But with that side being a levee and being so, I know I'm using the wrong term here, you know, slanted, you know, there's...
Slope,
there you go, thank you. Wouldn't it make sense to possibly do something a little more permanent on that side that would work a little bit better with the slope than what we're doing now on the other side? No?
I could bring up our... we would have to account for the slope while it's in Cockmore side, but it would be a similar thing to the extent possible what you see on the east side,
mm-hmm.
with modifications and things to take into consideration that slope.
Yeah, and so then we don't have to go back, you know, I don't know how many years, 5 years now, whatever, and refresh it again.
Okay, so... How about an example of what you mean by above and beyond a refresh?
The materials that you're using now, when you're coming down Discovery Bay Boulevard on the right side of the street, are those the right materials that we should be using on the other side of the street where it is a levee and there is a slope? Or would you recommend something, if you could do whatever you wanted, something that would last longer just because of the slope? Is there something better we should put on that side of the...
Yes, more rock, more boulders, but I still think we should continue with the theme kind of that we're using.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we could add more boulders and things.
Okay, maybe that's it, you know?
But is that something we can do that in addition at a later date?
At a later date,
with
yeah.
With a refresh. So
yeah.
The design that you're working on for that side at this moment could incorporate some of that without
incorporate
a
that,
huge
it,
change
yeah,
in what you're doing.
It can incorporate more plant material down the road. I guess what the board wants to hear is, hey, the plan that you have already, you feel is the highest and best plan, and we should move forward with it.
I do think so.
Okay. And there's no other considerations that, at this time?
At this time, no, but again, future to add things.
Now, the east side looks very nice, by the way.
It
yeah, it's very
yeah,
neat.
It does.
Very clean.
And I think we're doing the right thing here, because
yeah.
it would be odd to stop now,
yeah.
because it would... bring up a lot of comments within the community of, well, you know, you did the easy side, the small side, but you haven't addressed. So
yeah.
That's why I think continuity is good and that we should go ahead and proceed. I do appreciate that. I think that's a good idea, Brian.
Yeah. Okay, so we will continue as
yes.
normal per the previous direction.
And, yeah, and that's, you know, this is we're in a transitional period. This is when the new Park and Rec Committee get to hear more of the proposals and they can bring back more recommendations if there's going to be minor changes. And we're kind of in a transition here with regards to the board. So it's going to be exciting to come up with some new ideas and have everybody hear what Bill's plan was two months ago.
So given that, when can Bill start up again on his...
He can start up again immediately.
Any public comment? Bill?
You're agreeing with me. My comment was going to be, please keep the landscaping upgrade of Discovery Bay Boulevard moving. Regarding staff question number one, answer no. Regarding staff question number two, answer no. Regarding staff question number three, answer yes. And I think you've done that.
Thank you, Bill. Okay.
Mr. Chair, this is Rod Atterbury.
Yes, sir.
Mike, do you, General Manager Davies, I guess I should say, do you need and would like an action to adopt and proceed with staff direction number three?
I don't believe that's necessary because we still have, in effect, the board's original direction to refresh that west side. So therefore, the motion would only be redoing a vote that's already still in place. I would have needed a vote to stop it.
comfortable with the direction that you've received, I'll keep quiet. Thank you.
Thank you. We're comfortable.
Okay. Then with that, let's move on to item five.
Item five, thank you. I'm going to bring our Parks and Rec, our landscape manager up to talk about the Ravenwoods Park Place structure.
Okay. The 2019-2020 budget included a capital improvement project to replace the clay structure at Ravenswood. Early in 2020, staff sourced three clay equipment manufacturers to present their ideas of a nautical-themed structure that incorporated shade, included multiple clay options, and maximized the current space. The board approved the purchase of this equipment to Russ Recreation at the March 18, 2020 board meeting in the amount of $98,853. Staff then presented the structure to the county, and it was determined that prior to installation, there would need to be engineered drawings to meet the permit requirements. With the onset of COVID-19, the drawings, engineering services, and permit process experienced delays. The county finally approved the drawings in November of 2020, and staff held the bid opening for the installation on December 3rd. As you can tell, McNabb Construction was the low bid for a total of $48,888. The total budget for the project is $173,000, which includes the 15% contingency. The total estimated costs now are $161,161, with no anticipated further costs. Staff requests board approval to authorize the general manager to execute all contracts and purchase orders to McNabb Construction in the amount of $48,888 for the installation of the clay equipment at Ravenswood.
Motion to accept, yes?
I don't have any discussion. Low bid. And wow, what a variance in pricing, but.
Yeah. Where are we at with the clay structure? Is it arrived?
It is ordered. Okay. And McNabb will get the notice to proceed tomorrow, so it's still 3 or 4 weeks to get the equipment.
You know, and as usual, Bill, I assume that you've done your due diligence and research to make sure that all the firms are reputable, or at least the one you've chosen is reputable and can meet the...
He has done some work with Discovery Bay.
Okay.
He installed the Slifer shade structures.
Good enough.
Good job.
It's actually quite a big disparity between the highest and lowest.
Yeah. Big, and we got quite a few, which is nice.
Great. All right. Any public comment?
I do. I'm glad to see this project going on, but again, my concern is you're using Zone 9 money in the tune of $161,000 on this project. Don't let this be another boondoggle of having money to install something but nothing available to keep it maintained. I assume that the Zone 9 funds are limited, much like Zone 8. Will you be having to rob Peter to pay Paul to keep this stuff maintained, or is there adequate funds in the budget to keep it maintained and not just waste $161,000 on something that will just deteriorate over time? Thank you.
Thank you.
Move staff recommendation.
I believe you had a...
I was kind of throwing it out there. Yes, a second. You go. Yes.
Did you? What?
We start over again?
I thought Director Graham had made the original motion.
Then I'll second that motion. Either way, it makes no difference to me. Yes. Just moving things along.
Okay, roll call.
Director Graham?
Aye.
Director Callahan?
Aye.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Vice President Graves?
Aye.
President Gattell?
Aye. Motion passes. Staff report, manager report, excuse me, water and wastewater.
Right, we'll bring up our water and wastewater manager to give you a kind of a 3,000-foot level
scrub the screen at the bottom of the well just to bring the production numbers back up from that well. Filter repair project. Filter B at Newport in Willow. So there's three filters at the Willow Lake treatment plant. There's two filters at the Newport treatment plant. Basically, what that does is it filters the water, removes all the material in it, rust, iron, manganese, stuff like that. The filter media has roughly about a 10-year life cycle to it, and we're right at that stage, right about 10 years. And filter B at both plants need to be replaced. Both the Well 1B and filter project are kind of on hold right now. We're hoping that's going to be moving forward here in March. The Well 4 station piping and storm drain project at the Newport treatment plant, the station piping, there's a meter, there's a clay valve, the piping is old, it's rusted, and there's a lot of, it needs to be replaced. The storm drain is undersized. Material has been ordered. This project, once material shows up, will be starting early to mid-February. We have the Edgeview and Lakeview pipeline project. This is pipeline. The mains on Edgeview between Clubhouse and St. Andrews is in the properties on the south side of Edgeview. And we've had a couple instances where the surface water line that comes off it that goes across the street has failed and actually undermines some driveways. So we don't want that to happen anymore. We want to move that pipeline project to the street. The one that is in front of the Lakeview Business Plaza actually runs right through our landscaping. We've had two breaks there between Furwood and the actual business plaza, and that one needs to be kicked out to the street. No good. The urban water management plan and the water storage consistency plan. You guys heard Justin going about that tonight. I'm not going to dive into that. It is useful. It's a long-term planning that helps meet existing and future water needs for the town. The Willow Lake underwater crossing. That is an underwater main crossing that goes from Laguna to Willow Lake Court. It literally goes underneath the lake here in Discovery Bay. It failed. We have it isolated, and we're looking to replace that. And we just got back the encroachment permit from the county, so we're going to continue moving forward with that here very soon. The marina underwater crossing from the marina to Marling Court is another underwater crossing that goes underneath the delta. That one has failed as well. That one, we were able to put a clamp on it and stop the leak, but we still have it isolated because the rest of the pipe is still in pretty bad shape, and we need to run a liner inside of that pipe to get that back up. That's on the water side. On the wastewater side, we have some projects that upgrade our lift station's control panels. Right now we have S that's up next. That should be starting here very soon. We're actually thinking it's going to finish February, March. Basically replacing the control panel that's old and it's outdated. And it's just going to help with operations and ease of use for the lift stations, which are, it brings up wastewater up back up to higher ground so it can flow back to the next lowest lift station you popped up. We got several throughout the town. After lift station S, we're going to start on lift station D. Gregory will be starting a scope of work with that. That's going to be the next lift station after S is completed. The outfall diffuser project. Right now, we are waiting on permitting agencies. So the Army Corps of Engineers and the Fish and Wildlife. We should hopefully hear back from them sometime February. Once we get that back, the next step will be basically we'll have 50% design in March from Gregory, 100% design in April, hopefully, and then a construction we're hoping will start in July, August. The DNUT project for wastewater treatment submittal for review. Oh, I'm sorry, we're going to get that in February, sorry. The 90% submittal review in February. That project is going to be starting July of this year, and it's going to go on until June of 2023. And we have to have that completed, I think, by the end of 2023 for the state. And that's it for the projects that are currently going on right now. On water and wastewater. So
that's it?
Yeah.
So you're going to be hearing more about this stuff coming up, water and wastewater meetings. Meetings just like this. So just want to give you guys all an update on that.
So regarding Wall H, that did get approved then, and when will that start?
It's a monitoring well for right now, and it's kind of on the Pantages timeline. They got to raise the elevation there and stuff like that, but we can really get any infrastructure work done there.
So that's at point, is it at the end of Point of Timber then, or?
If you were to go to the end of Point of Timber where it dead ends, and then make a hard right and follow the sound wall all the way down to the...
Okay, so it's going to be at the far...
By my house.
South end.
Right by the
catch basin. Oh, by that catch basin right there? Okay.
Right before the house.
Where's the access going to be? Through Pantages or through the Ravenswood?
Right now, Pantages.
Okay.
We're looking at that stormwater drain basin. We think there might be an access right there as well. So we're hoping for two access points, but that's it. Still
here. I have one other comment if nobody else has any. I just want to give kudos to Aaron and his staff. I got a phone call from an individual in town here today who had a leak. Didn't know he had a leak. Kind of figured out he had a leak, but he's a fairly tough guy to please. And he called me up and told me how professional Aaron's staff handled the project, told him exactly what the responsibilities were, and got him in the right direction to fix his leak. So, kudos to you and your staff.
Thank you. I'll let them know.
Do you have any public comments?
Yeah, I had a leak, which your staff was very helpful figuring out, and ended up having to replace the main water line from the street to the house and repair it. But with respect to the denitrate project that you talked about, is that the... sort of the replacement project where you said if you give us another $1.5 million, we can make, we don't have to fix up the old pumping station and can go to just do it all with a new one? Is that still the way the plan is working? I think it was something like, it would bump the cost about $15 million. Have that change been made to those previously adopted plans?
The DNIT project is a separate project. It's putting in three more basins at Wastewater Treatment Plant 2, and that's where the majority of that cost is coming from. We would also have to add DNIT to Plant 1, and we found by moving the D9 basin to plant 2 would save, plant 1 could open up a can of worms by building that there. So by building a new D9 at plant 2 basin would hope help offset that.
That's another unfunded
fines.
Mandate by the state.
You could pay the fines if you didn't want to do it.
Which I'm sure would
be more expensive to do it.
Thank you.
Yep, exactly.
Okay, gentlemen.
Do we have
the CFC considered suing state to try and get funding, even though there's this court case that says you can just raise your rates to pay for it? And that the ratepayers can always say no, which is an impossibility. So I think that there's a conflict between the existing court case and our situation. Have we considered going to the state with a suit saying, hey, you got to give us more money, or give us some money? Question.
general manager's report. I'm going to turn it over to our legal counsel, Rod Atterbury, to talk about my performance evaluation.
Thank you, Mr. Davies. Board members, for those of you who are new, this will be new to you, but each year the board reviews and prepares an evaluation of your general manager. I know that three of you are brand new to this, although some of you have been involved in meetings and continue to attend. So after discussion with the chair, we have concluded that we will be providing a evaluation form. It is confidential and anonymous. You can put your name on it if you so choose, but they're anonymous. And it's an evaluation of Mike Davies and the previous year performance. It also includes a opportunity to comment on goals or things that you'd like to see in the upcoming year. And so with discussion with the chair, we decided that it was appropriate to send it to all individuals. So we will be sending it to you all, and recognize that Mike looks forward to receiving critical comments. An evaluation that says you're doing wonderful and you're great is never very helpful. So we thought we would send it to everyone, and the first meeting in February, we will hold a closed session that will include two items. One is the evaluation of your general manager, and you will submit your evaluations to the extent that you want to. There's no requirement to do so. And I would encourage those new members that don't think they can answer a particular question because you have not observed Mike's performance to indicate that that is NA, not applicable, or you don't have enough information to respond. So I ask you to put that on your evaluation. We do a summary analysis of your general manager's evaluation. So we don't provide them with individual reports, and would reflect your comments as to I don't have enough information as appropriate. If you think you have enough information, provide it, and we will be conducting a closed session on the first meeting in February. And so you should receive by email. We're a little different this year because usually I hand them out in a hard copy. And as we're not attending meetings and meetings are only allowed virtually, I didn't provide you a copy, but we will email them, and they are fillable forms. So you can fill them out online and submit them. We will do that the first week in February, or the first meeting in February. In addition to that item, there will be a discussion, but actual public item and an item on our regularly scheduled agenda regarding your general manager's compensation. If you have any questions, my request would be that you reach out to Andy and or myself directly regarding those questions. Just to note, you will receive that from my legal assistant, which is Rhonda Olmo, and it's spelled O-L-M-O. And I give you that because I don't want the email to end up in spam. So it's O-L-M-O, and you should be receiving that probably tomorrow. Any questions? Happy to address them for you.
I'm seeing a bunch of head shaking. No.
Most of the board has been through this, so just wanted to report on that issue. And
nice send most
let
of
you know they will be coming, and we're cognizant of the issue that we only have two members that have been board members during Mike's tenure over this last year, and to the extent other members can chime in, great. Feel comfortable chiming in, great. If not, there's no punishment for failure to answer a question. It's not like the FAP.
Okay, great. I think we got clarification and direction. Is that it?
Thank you.
That's it. All right. Well, then with that, we will adjourn the meeting at 8:17.